Non-native EMF is one of those topics that can turn the conversation to a scary place quickly. We're not going to do that on today's show. We're going to talk about some health risks of EMF, but also some solutions. So stay tuned to today's episode. Welcome back to the Evolving Wellness Podcast. My name is Sarah, and today's guest is Nick Pinault, who is an expert on non-native EMF, has uncovered a ton of research on some of the health risks and health conditions that have arisen from electrosensitivity from non-native EMF, but he also provides some solutions. Now, Nick and I both live in heavily populated city environments and have been able to find solutions to non-native EMF. So this is not a doom and gloom show. We want to provide you with solutions. And speaking of which, Nick has an amazing summit called the EMF Health Hazard Summit, and that is coming up in March. So the link to register for that is going to be in the show notes as well as in the pinned comment. This is a fantastic resource if you're wanting to dive deeper into this topic and learn more real world, easy solutions that you can implement for yourself and for your family to really enhance your health. So check out the EMF Hazards Summit, going to be in the pinned comment as well as the show notes if you want to learn more. And before we jump into today's episode, I want to mention two sponsors. The first one is going to be Viva Rays. They are my go-to source for protecting circadian rhythms. And speaking of EMF, they have some amazing low EMF headphones that you can listen to podcasts like this using. The second sponsor is Upgraded Formulas. Now, one of the things that can happen with high exposure to non-native EMF is a loss of magnesium, a loss of minerals. So I'm a big fan of the Upgraded Formulas magnesium supplement, as well as their hair tissue mineral analysis with a consultation for understanding the mineral balance in your body. You can use the code YOGI12 or YOGI to save over at Upgraded Formulas. Links will be in the show notes for you to follow those. As always, check out my free resources, www.sarahklinerwellness.com. Go to the free resources tab to get my free eBooks if you're just getting started on your health journey here. I would love to help you out. Let's go ahead and jump into today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I'm so excited for today's guests. We are going to talk all about non-native EMF. Nick, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you. And we recently just had you on the Health Transformation Summit. So much value there. And I thought, you know, let's do a longer episode on the podcast. You've got an amazing summit coming up that I think is really, really an amazing resource for people. So that will be linked in the show notes. But let's just start off with telling everyone a little bit about yourself and how you got into the work that you do.
Sure. Well, you know, I just have a background in communications and a curious mind. So I got interested in environmental toxins of all kinds starting in 2010 and really focusing at first on nutrition. That's really what I knew, what I was interested in. And I realized, you know, it's not just about calories and macros. And that was my first level of understanding, which is really, really far from, I think, what most people understand these days. So it's not just about macros. It's also about micronutrients. And I learned about the vitamins and minerals. But then I learned, okay, what about glyphosate and these other contaminants that are there? What if you're getting the food, which is beneficial, and I mean, you need to feed yourself in one way or another, but you're also getting the toxins. And I saw, you know, conflicting reports, but then quickly I realized, my God, these things are allowed in our food supply, and it's a we're in big trouble. And I realized that tap water isn't safe, and that there's water fluoridation that's still going on in many, many cities and countries. And I said, my God, these things are adding up. And then I stumbled upon, you know, the possible dangers of cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. And I really didn't understand any of it at a time in about 2015. And I didn't really take it that seriously. But when I started diving into that science and realized, my God, in some of these toxins that we're talking about, the evidence isn't even as good as the evidence we have against, you know, the safety of cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. So why is it that this is not more widely discussed about? Well, One thing I discovered, and I mean, everyone knows that, is that we are addicted to devices. So there's a big, mental block of discussing these dangers because it's not like many people are addicted to glyphosate or arsenic and fruit juice or these kind of things. They generally recognize that, well, these companies are poisoning us. We should probably eat stuff that does not contain these toxins. But when it comes to cell phones and Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, oh, wait a minute. You're telling me that my favorite things in this world, my Bluetooth earbuds and my Wi-Fi router and the technology is harming me. But at the same time, it kind of feels like, it's part of life now. So what do I do with it? So it's a sort of love and hate relationship there. So I really discovered a topic that is quite complicated in the end. It's complicated to learn about it because there's a lot of conflicting information, different types of EMFs, a lot of engineer lingo around EMFs also. And let's face it, a lot of information on the internet is also, some of it is fear-mongering, some of it is complete dismissal. So there's both sides here. Some people say, oh no, there's nothing to see here. And other people are saying, we're all gonna die, which is kind of equally wrong in a sense, and very discouraging to many people, at least the part like, oh, 5G is gonna kill us and all these messages. So I said, okay, well, maybe it's gonna kill us, but what can we do about it? What is the real way to reduce EMF exposure? And then what are the real health consequences? What do we actually know? And then what are the scientific unknowns as well, which are many, and unfortunately, and to this day, this still holds true. I've always been more concerned about what we do not know about the health effects of EMFs rather than what we do know. What we do know is bad enough, but the unknowns are just unimaginable, and the consequences are just incredible, not just on human beings, but also on ecosystems and the food supply because of the effects on pollinators and many other aspects. So I guess I got interested and curious at first, then I became obsessed with a topic, and then I was kind of stuck keep talking about it because most people still don't know to this day that this topic is credible and serious. And I guess that's part of why I created also the EMF Hazard Summit, which I am now turned into an annual event because awareness is kind of the basic step. And yet, I don't know what's the percentage of people who are actually aware of these dangers, but it's very, very small. So if you already know about EMFs, you're way ahead of the average person in the street. And my hope is to expand this awareness so that we can move things in the right direction.
Yeah, it's, as someone who's kind of been in the alternative health space for a while, it was one of the last things for me to really be like adopt. And it was like, the blue blockers took me a long time to do that at night because I was like, that just sounds so stupid. But I did it. And then I started feeling so much better just from wearing blue blockers. And now I can't go without them. I have very serious, like sensitive to blue light
Yep.
after sunset.
Me too.
And the EMF was something that I'm like, no, I just can't imagine that that would be impactful, right? But then I stopped wearing the earbuds and I started turning off the Wi-Fi and I hardwired and I started mitigating. And now when I go to an area that's very high non-native EMF, I feel it, and I don't think it's mental. I don't feel well. And so it's those, I think for a lot of people, we've just become very desensitized to things like blue light and non-native EMF. And a lot of people can't really tell a difference until they're separated from those things for a while. Unless you're electro hypersensitive, which there are some people that are like that. But most people were just so desensitized from being around it for so long that we can't really tell until we unplug from those things.
I agree 100%. In fact, one of my colleagues, Dr. Tom Moorcroft, who's a DO, if I recall correctly, or maybe a doctor of chiropractic, and he turned off the Wi-Fi after reading my book back in 2017. And the moment he turned off the Wi-Fi, he started sleeping horribly for the first time of his life. It lasted
Wow.
2 weeks, and he told me, after 2 weeks, I had better sleep than baseline, but somehow it really seems like our brains are being entrained by the 10 hertz pulsation frequency that is emitted by Wi-Fi. So it's very likely that we are adapting to some extent to the electromagnetic environment. And I don't want to say completely adapting because all the data we have shows that we're not really adapting in the sense that this is not some stressor that you have once, you adapt for, you get stronger. I wish it were the case. And maybe it could be the case because, in fact, there are some uses such as a PEMF device, you know, the pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, where you use it for a certain amount of time to, I don't know, I use a PEMF to my knee sometimes and it kind of increases circulation. And also, there's a hormetic effect where it stresses my cells and then they recover and they get stronger. That's not like that. It's more like taking an ice bath 24/7. It wouldn't be beneficial,
Right.
would it? It doesn't work. You have to recuperate from that cold or heat exposure. So really how we have to think about it is really like an environmental stressor, and the fact that we are exposed to it all the time can mask the effect, but it does not mean that the effect is not there. And many people just realize that they have had an effect or that they were more impacted than they previously thought when they take this EMF vacation that is recommended by certain environmental medicine doctors, such as the Dr. Neil Maton, who's featured on my summit. He's someone who treats the most hypersensitive patients ever, those that are hypersensitive to smells, chemicals, EMFs, light. Some of them, you know, they're just bedridden. They're essentially dying is a reality because they don't know exactly what to do, and it can get them better over time. But one of the things that needs to be done in many situations is to clean up the EMF environment and get them in, clean up the mold and chemicals, of course, especially if they have these triggers. But if they are also EMF sensitive and you don't take care of that, very rarely will you see complete healing, or people cannot sleep properly. They stay inflamed, and their body, in fact, some of them have a sort of histaminic reaction to it, just like a food allergen or an environmental allergen, also like mold. So the reality is, your body is always triggered and is trying to ward off this sort of signal, which is bizarre because it's not a molecule, you know, it's just electromagnetic energy. And yet, some people have this reaction. In fact, the most shocking examples of electro hypersensitivity, and not necessarily shocking, but revealing, are those that can get skin rashes when exposed to certain sources, where they are near a Wi-Fi router. And one person in particular that I'm aware of, who's an activist, gets eyes like micro tears in his eyes, and he can get eye bleeding from
Cool.
EMFs because he's so sensitive. So it's not necessarily the EMFs that will do that to the eye, but the body reacts in a way that is self-destructive in response to the EMFs. So in a sense, it's almost like a sort of autoimmune trigger to the EMFs. And that's an extreme example. You don't see everyone walking in the street and having eye bleeding, or else the technology would have been banned, you know, the moment it 1 week after the first cell phone. But the reality is that this is increasing, and that this is what I display in the summit. But something I just had in my note that it really made me think about EMFs differently. It's bizarre when I revisit the work of certain scientists. Dr. Paul Héroux, who's a fellow French Canadian from the McGill University here in Montreal, said that if you change the mitochondrial voltage by either +2% or -2%, so it's a difference of 2% in voltage at the mitochondrial level, what happens is that it can take up to 3 or 4 weeks for the cells to adapt to this electrical change. And he measured that in cancer cells, for example, and in healthy cells. And his work is kind of hard to grasp for me, but overall, he just says, you know, the body can adapt, but it takes 3 or 4 weeks. And then the moment that you change the EMF environment again, another 3 or 4 weeks. So the reality is, in this day and age, the electromagnetic environment is changing every microsecond. So we're not adapting to it. And that's another, you know, hint that we have that at the mitochondrial level, our mitochondria are trying to sense the environment and adapt. But if it takes 3 or 4 weeks, we're in trouble because, of course, from second to second, there's new signals in the air and all sorts of noise going on in the environment.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things that you can't necessarily escape if you're living in a very populated area. So I think that is the thing that really is the hardest to talk about, because it's like, how can you really help someone that's living in that highly populated environment? Do they have to move? Are there steps that they can take? Because not everyone has the luxury to just pick up everything and just move.
Yeah.
So what do you think? What are your thoughts
Well,
on
that's
that?
a yeah, that's a huge question, you know, and many people are I live in a fairly EMF environment myself in Montreal, where I cannot control the cell towers. The ambient levels are fairly high compared to certain places in the countryside that I could go to. At the same time, I love the city for many reasons. My wife is more of a, you know, city person, so it's difficult. And then the reality is, how do we find a little patch of nature in the middle of all of this? So the reality is, how I see it is this: EMF, man-made EMF, is noise to your mitochondria, to your cells. The more noise you have, the worse off you are. But your noise tolerance can also be changed. Some people are this tolerant to noise, a little bit tolerant to noise, and when it gets too noisy, they have a headache. Other people are able to handle a lot of noise because they've created resilience in their body. So when you have things that are of course part of things you probably talk about every other week, like the proper water, staying hydrated will help. It will create resilience in your body, and there's direct links that we can make to your resilience to non-native EMFs. Regular earthing or grounding, time in nature in general also is very beneficial, and sun exposure. And something that I pulled up that might also be interesting is how, yes, it is a sort of noise in the environment, this man-made EMFs, and it can even not prevent, but decrease our body's ability to read the natural environment, which again shows that if you have this much noise, you cannot connect as much with the sun and with the Schumann resonance, with the natural frequencies that are out there. Because again, it's one engineer, Pavel Wypichowski, who's been on my podcast several times, really put it in those terms, signal to noise ratio, and these engineering terms, where if you're trying to have one antenna connect to another, you have something called the signal to noise ratio. How strong in the sig is the signal, and how does it compare to the noise? And there's a point, a sweet spot, where unfortunately you're going to lose signal. You're going to have a call drop, for example, if you're on your phone. Hello, hello, what's happening, mom? You don't hear anything, because the call dropped, because now the noise is too high compared to the signal. The same thing is happening with your biology. If you don't have enough signal of natural EMFs, and you stay inside, you're not outside in the sun, and on top of that, you have a lot of noise, then maybe your body is not getting what it needs. And one thing I wanted to talk about is the vitamin D receptor. And there's a one researcher in particular called Professor Trevor Marshall, who works in California, and he published that. I don't know how he looks at these things, but he looked at the 3D configuration of the VDR, the vitamin D receptor in the human body. And he said that at the Wi-Fi frequency, there's resonance between the VDR and the Wi-Fi. So in that sense, the VDR will likely be disrupted by Wi-Fi in particular, which is interesting because it makes you wonder. I've heard some reports, and I haven't seen good data on this, but it makes you wonder, if you live in a city that has this much Wi-Fi, are you that much more likely to fail to produce vitamin D? Some practitioners told me yes. It's
Yes,
tough.
I say yes,
Yeah.
100%. I
Is
mean,
that a case in your
my,
clients?
yeah, 100%.
So
It's
one of the
the
reasons, you
LA,
know,
New
yeah.
York are the biggest places where I can make vitamin D. Doesn't matter how much sun exposure I get, it's not going up. I'm like, It's a hard conversation. It's very possible that it's the non-native EMF.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's another reason for you to get your vitamin D, and as much as you can, take a vacation, go, you know, outside the city and get your sun and get your nature as much as you can. And then the reality is this. You told me, do I have to move? Well, it depends. Are you thriving in this environment or are you feeling sick? Some patients are extremely sick in a city and they have to move away. And then eventually maybe they can go back to a city. I know electro hypersensitive individuals that can visit the city for about a weekend and then they have to get the hell out. That's their reality. Other people can do fairly well. Am I in the optimal environment for optimal health? I know that this is not the case. And for the moment, I'm happy to where my health is at, but I feel way better in nature. So I know that I could, you know, what I experience is probably 70% of my potential in this space, but it just shows you whether it's VDR or sleep quality or these mitochondrial processes, if you have more noise, you're less optimized at every single level. And that's, let's say, if you're healthy right now, it just means that it's that much more difficult to thrive in this environment. But if you're sick and discover that you suffer from different symptoms related to these exposures, then it's a different story because it's very hard to not get more and more sensitive over time once you're on that thread. Once you're becoming more sensitive every year, many readers write to me, say, Nick, you know, it used to be just the phone and I don't use my phone anymore, but now it's Wi-Fi. And next year, is it going to be, you know, cell towers? Because I don't know what I'm going to do. And the reality is once you're becoming sensitized more and more, it's hard to reverse that trend. It's not impossible, though, as I've been told by many environmental medicine doctors, but it's, you know, it's a long journey to go back to make sure that the body goes back to, let's say, a normal reaction. I don't want to say normal, but to a reaction that is more manageable, if you want.
Yeah, it's, you know, I just did a class this morning about metabolic flexibility and weight loss, because so many people are struggling with weight loss, you know, and so I did this whole class on it. And, you know, I did a section about non-native EMF because I've had clients, you know, one of my most difficult clients, and she kind of just moved on because I got to the point where I just told her after, I think it was about a year and a half of working with her, I essentially told her, I never want to say this to anyone, but really think that we're not going to see progress until you quit your job. And I never say that to someone, but she was about 50 pounds overweight and her thyroid was tanked. We were doing everything strategically. Either she was not telling me the truth about what she was eating and all these other things. And I always love to give people the benefit of the doubt. And she was telling me she's doing all these really, you know, great things with food, but her job, what she did for a living, was technology, IT, fixing computers in a school all day. So she had two cell phones that she had to wear on her body, and the school administrators were calling her all day to say, go to this room and fix this computer, go to this room and fix that computer. A lot of the computer labs that she was in were dark, no windows, and she's working on technology Wi-Fi all day long with no breaks to, you know, go outside. And it's just a really, you know, working for the school system, these people really are sacrificing a lot. You know, I feel like hospital workers and teachers, these service positions that we need, often are struggling with these kinds of issues because they're not given the proper outdoor time. The circadian signaling is off and they're exposed to high levels of non-native EMF, you know, in both environments. And so I just got to the point with her and I never do this, but I said, honestly, I don't know that we are going to be able to move the needle with you anymore until you leave the job, because it's real. And it was stressing her out too. So I've seen it in real time with people. And it did for her, I think, really come down to the poor, like you were saying, the poor signals. She's getting terrible environmental signals, no sunlight, no grounding, no outdoor time, and then bombarded with non-native EMF all day long for her job. And I just, yeah, I've seen it just destroy people's health.
Yeah. And, you know, for all these things, it becomes very difficult to pinpoint Is it the food? Is it this? Is it that? And you know that, and probably a lot of your listeners also do that. Things are complicated. You have to kind of get everything right. And if you get one or two things right and everything works for you, you have the weight loss or you're reaching your goals, fine. And then you can look at other things that maybe make it go from good to excellent as far as your health goes. But if things are not working, you have to look at all factors that could impact weight loss. And interesting, I just pulled up the research again. Dr. Paul Heroux, since he did this research on mitochondrial disruption in EMS, what he said, and that's him, and he's, and his team scientists, he's always invited to the US to be an expert witness on many cases of brain cancer and things like that, given or at least where they think that the cell phones were killed someone or gave them a brain tumor. And he said in 2018, he said that these fields disrupt metabolism. They are what we call a metabolism disruptor. They probably make us fat. And he said, will American women forgive the wireless industry for making them fat? And I was like, my jaw dropped when I realized he's a very serious scientist. That's not something he would say lightly. So I haven't seen a lot of data where they could track people in weight gain or weight loss with, dosimetry where you could wear something that measures your cell phone exposure or exposure to these signals. So I cannot say, for sure that this is the case, but we know that radio frequency radiation, each time you're getting a phone call and you have that phone on you, it might make your blood sugar go up because of the stress response. So what if you're, especially imagine someone who is 10 times more sensitive than the average? Then it means that maybe their blood sugar is always elevated from these exposures and not even from food. And that's the crazy part. In fact, some researchers like Dr. Magda Havis mitigated a certain type of EMFs for some people, and people that were pre-diabetic or diabetic and taking insulin saw their insulin needs dramatically drop when they mitigated the EMF. So it looks like for some people, might not be everyone, but for some people, this is the missing key, and it is keeping them in that state. So, is it that it's playing on the mitochondrial level, on the hormonal level, on the brain waves? Probably all of them, but it just shows that if you overlook EMFs, then you might get stuck in a big way. And it's increasing. That's the thing.
I agree. It's funny, when I kind of got into this journey, I was trying to get pregnant with my son, who's now almost 17 months. And that was, like I said, kind of the last thing to go. I did the sunrise. I finally did the blue blockers, but I had to get rid of the AirPods. I loved the AirPods because they're so convenient. Never really wore the devices, just those would kind of always stress me out a little bit. But getting rid of those AirPods and turning off the Wi-Fi at night, that was kind of one of those things that I really felt a difference. And I did end up losing 30 pounds before I gave birth to my son, and I think it was a piece of the puzzle. I don't know that it was the whole puzzle. I think there was like so much, including, nutrition and what I was drinking and the grounding and the sun and all of these things combined together. But it's a crucial piece, in my 21-day leptin reset program, which is a program that's supposed to help people reset their leptin, lose weight. It's kind of modeled after what I did and what I've done with clients over the last few years using circadian biology and quantum biology. There's a whole section on non-native EMF and a lot of this research that you talk about, because it is a thing that people just think it's a bunch of crazy people on the internet talking to scare people. And I don't think that's your intention with any of this. I think it's to help people and to empower them with knowledge that there are things that they can do to mitigate this, right? Like, don't wear the AirPods, don't wear Apple Watch, don't wear these things on your body, don't keep your phone on your body, like the inverse square law of just creating distance. So if you're listening to this and feeling overwhelmed, that's I think the first step. And one of the things that people do with these like Apple Watches, which is so ironic to me, is they're using them to track their sleep. And I'd love to hear like maybe some of the research for people who are still skeptical on non-native EMF and sleep, if you have any, not to put you on the spot there, but just maybe we can talk about that. Because if you're putting something near your vital organs, and sleeping with it, how much of an impact could that have on someone's sleep?
For sure. You know, it's funny because this very morning I kind of pulled out the best research on sleep and how it's affected by cell phone radiation as I was writing a newsletter for later for my summit. And basically what I said is this, you know, there's no doubt that cell phone radiation can shift how your brain waves operate. And it's nothing new because you have research, you probably have military research from the 70s showing this. But again, it's been, you know, rediscovered. And of course, in the 70s, we're not talking about cell phones, but we're talking about radar, for example. That is essentially the same type of radiation, although radar can be quite powerful, but it has been studied for years and years and years, over 50 years. The latest research we have at the beginning of the 2000s, there were several sleep provocation studies where they placed cell phones near the head of participants. And sometimes it was a cell phone, sometimes it was a sham exposure, so no signal. And they looked at, is there, you know, a correlation between having a phone before sleep and then insomnia? And they discovered what they called cell phone induced insomnia, where 30 minutes of cell phone exposure could lead to 1 hour additional sleep onset. So tossing and turning for an hour where you're not really sleeping, although for some people, they kind of perceive it as I was sleeping, but it might because you have an increase in alpha waves, which is kind of your mind is wandering, but you're not really sleeping. So you're not entering sleep yet, and you have a sort of insomnia that is created. And then more recently, in 2020, 2021, you have also provocation studies on healthy volunteers that say, well, we don't really know what it means, but clearly radio frequency radiation from phones will shift your brain waves. And a lot of these researchers have concluded things that left me completely horrified, to be honest, and very discouraged because one of them who's a sleep researcher in the UK, I think his name is Horn, and not to throw him under the bus, but honestly, it was a very, very irresponsible thing to say in a study. He said that, well, we did find an effect, and people had insomnia from their phone, but let's not conclude. We cannot conclude that cell phones are dangerous. That's what he said. He said because the arousal effect of a phone is equivalent to half a cup of coffee. And that's not dangerous, right? It's just coffee. So that's really what he said, and that has been quoted in a 2008 Scientific American article. And I about jumped from my chair at my desk when I read this. I said, "Wait a minute! He does not feel that cell phones are dangerous." That's how it's written. I don't feel like phones are dangerous.
That's not
Wait,
science.
that's not science. That's oh, you
No.
don't have the feeling. Oh, thanks for your great opinion, for your great take. But look. The reality is this: most of the population isn't sleeping enough hours, the amount of time, and then the quality isn't there. And then we also have something like 15% of adults that have insomnia, and the definition
Oh,
is
yeah.
something that lasts for months and months. I mean, you must be shattered at this point if you have sleep troubles for months on end. And in fact, in older adults, and I don't know how that's defined, I don't know if it's over 60 or 70 or 80, it's 75% of insomnia that I found this morning. I'm like, wait a minute, it
Wow.
cannot be right. So in reality, you have a lot of people that suffer from insomnia maybe later in life. And is it because they're increasingly sensitive to these changes in the environment? I don't know. But for sure, it is impacting your sleep. And let's not say that giving half a cup of coffee to every single human being before bed is a good idea and it's completely safe. It's not, right? I
No.
mean, if the
No.
population would be in optimal health already, maybe we wouldn't be stuck having this conversation and posting it on YouTube and Rumble and blah, blah, blah. But now this is we're in a state where you have easily have the population that is sick. And then the real percentage of people that, let's say, are really disease-free, I wouldn't even try to guess more than 5%. You know, a lot of people have underlying issues, and who has optimal sleep? It's probably, you know, this 0.01% of people listening to this right now that say, oh, yeah, I have perfect sleep. Good. But, you know, on a population-wide level, the fact that this research has not been turned into policy where we say, well, what do we do, right? Do we ban cell phones? Doesn't work. We should maybe tell people that cell phones can disrupt sleep. What
Yeah.
a great idea. Let's do
Right.
this. But it didn't
Right.
happen. So to this day, this is, and that's more than 15 years ago, almost probably 17 years since these provocation studies have been done. And now we're moving to, 4G phones, 5G phones, even more signals, more complicated. And those researchers even said that, well, it would be interesting to do follow-up studies just to figure out if certain people might be more sensitive and things like that, but not to prove that cell phones are dangerous, of course not. Just to prove that we can use those findings for medical technology. There we go. And this is the type of research that gets funded. Let's use radio frequency radiation to optimize sleep because we can shift brain waves, right? We can do whatever we want with the brain. How fascinating. And neuroscientists would be all over that, and angel investors, and they're going to find a way to do a new biohacking device. And that's cool. But let's look also at what is ailing us in the first place. And that's not a popular line of research, which
No.
is why it hasn't been pursued that much. There's not massive funding in findings that just go against an entire industry. And then where
Right.
everyone who reads these findings, they're like, damn. I hate it, right? I hate it myself.
Yeah.
I would
Yeah.
love to just use technology like a normal person. I have the cool earbuds in and all of this. But the reality is, if you do that, you might get in trouble. Many people
Right.
do.
Thank you so much for listening to the Evolving Wellness Podcast. Quickly wanted to remind you that if you're really, really looking to learn more about non-native EMF, how to protect yourself, how to protect your family, you can register for the EMF Hazards Summit that Nick does every single year. Every year it gets better and better with more and more guests. A fantastic way to educate yourself on this topic and to learn real life ways to protect yourself and your family. So check that out down in the show notes. And if you are enjoying the show, please head on over to Apple or Spotify and leave the show up to a 5-star review. It will help to get this information out to more and more people. If you're on YouTube, just leave us a comment or a like, and it will again help to get the show out to more people. We need to talk more and more about these topics and make them accessible to everyone. So again, I hope you're enjoying today's show, and let's jump back into it.
Yeah, it's, and I know that Carrie and I talk about this, Carrie Bennett, the non-native EMF is kind of a form of light that you can't see, and people have to see things to actually believe them.
Yeah.
I'm more and more not that way after feeling the big difference, but it disrupts pineal melatonin, and melatonin is this master antioxidant that is crucial for cancer prevention. If you get sick, you're supposed to sleep more, rest more, so your body can make more melatonin. It's an amazing hormone that your body makes to help you repair. And if you think about people, so many people sleep with the phone plugged in next to their body. It's like, even if you're blocking out all the artificial light, which most people are not, you should, you've got this other form of light that's disrupting your pineal melatonin and preventing that secretion. And so it's like, I don't think that anyone's ever going to come out and really, from these big companies and admit this, because there's, like you said, there's too much money in it and there's too much at stake. The apps, Instagram and Facebook, as much of these are as these have been great for connecting me with hundreds of thousands of people across the world. Amazing. But the whole goal of the app is to keep you on the app. They want you awake, scrolling until 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. They are trying to keep you on that app. And it gets me sometimes, I'm like, oh, I just meant to pick up my phone and check one thing. And then like 30 minutes later, I'm like, oh my God, it's so insidious. It kind of like reads your brain. And there's so much money in this that I just don't think we're ever going to get to the point where anybody is going to make this public knowledge. And so these types of conversations and the summit that you do is priceless. It's priceless information that I think could really help people improve their health. And you mentioned autoimmune. Like, I feel like so many people are struggling with autoimmune conditions, and it's maybe not just one thing, but I really feel like the non-native EMF is a big factor, you know, in people struggling with autoimmune conditions. Are you kind of seeing the same?
Yeah, there's not a lot of data on this, but we do have data showing that either certain people can be immune system can be hyperactive or hypoactive. So it can kind of impact your immune system in different ways and in ways that probably are a big question mark. But how much is that contributing to the increase in autoimmunity that we have? Well, I mean, let's just look at how the immune system or part of the immune system, let's say the white blood cells can find a wound, or how the stem cells can find a wound. And that's through an electromagnetic beacon signal that is emitted. So if I cut myself, that's something I learned from a stem cell researcher last year. So I was listening to, I cannot recall, I listened to too many scientific discussions, you know, and you have a wound and all of a sudden you have an electrical gradient that is kind of acting as a beacon signal, the way I understand it. And stem cells go by and they're like, wait a minute. Oh, well, there's a problem here. And then there's all sorts of other communication systems. Some of it is chemical, but some of it is electrical. So if you have external EMFs, how much are you impairing your body's ability to find itself? That white blood cell or that stem cell's ability to just navigate and know where the wound is? Well, you probably are interfering. We're really playing with fire here. And to bring it back to autoimmune disease, the same researcher on the VDR, Trevor Marshall, is also an expert on autoimmunity. And he basically took patients, he has 64 different patients, and had them wear a shielded cap at night. And he wanted to see, can people feel better if we shield the brain from external EMFs, such as, you know, cell towers and all the environmental electropollution, so to speak? And can they get better? 90% of them said that they have definite or strong changes in their disease symptoms. And he said, well, this is much higher than the reported 3 to 5% rate for electromagnetic hypersensitivity in a healthy population. So he said, this suggests that effective control of environmental electrosmog may soon become necessary for successful therapy of autoimmune disease. He said that's 2017 is when I wrote my book. To this day, I don't see a lot of discussion around autoimmunity and the importance of shielding against EMS, but I see different examples and hear different examples of people where you shield against EMFs. And for sure, turning off your phone at night is a great step, or hitting airplane mode. But for some people that have diseases that they're trying to get out of, then sometimes shielding the environment, such as the bedroom, is a great action step. And Brian, my colleague who does EMF mitigation and thousands of homes around the US, told me that certain people see a big difference in their symptoms. One woman, for example, had very bad side effects after shielding her room, where she went from having hypothyroid symptoms and taking medication to all of a sudden having hyperthyroid hormone side effects, where she felt, you know, sweaty and hot flashes, and it was horrible. She went back to her doctor and needed to reduce her medication to next to nothing, maybe because the body says, okay, well, now I'm in a normal environment, I can go back to homeostasis. So again, and I don't know if it was Hashimoto's, but for a lot of people, it is the case that they have some form of autoimmunity to the thyroid, the little I know about this subtopic. So it is to be noted that, you know, in the case of autoimmune diseases and MS and, you know, things that just won't go away, that are chronic, have been there for a long time, or have been brewing for years, such as cancer, including cancer and other conditions that they don't just appear after 6 months. Sometimes it can take, you know, decades of onset to eventually show up. EMF mitigation to a higher level, where you hire an EMF mitigation specialist to shield your home or at least your bedroom, sometimes it is granted. Just like if you're completely mold toxic, well, sometimes you can clean up your own home and do the best you can to find mold sources, but sometimes you do have to have a professional come to your home, find the sources, and clean up. Because if you're not seeing those improvements, then sometimes you have to go a little bit, you know, more extreme, if you will. But for many people who do, it makes a big difference. And if it's not to heal from a condition, it can be just to maintain good health. Because let's face it, it's not like if you feel good right now, you don't feel sensitive. It's not like you need more EMFs at night. We don't need those signals. Yeah. We shouldn't have these signals, but they're here. So doing without is better.
Yeah. And I know this may be like out of something that you've really looked at, but I was curious, because I would love to, I want to talk about the cellular dehydration, the studies you pulled on water, and then some maybe things people can do. But I was curious if you've looked at any of the research on hydrogen and radiation, because that's something I've been kind of studying. If you haven't, it's totally fine. I was just curious.
Yeah, molecular hydrogen, you know, as far as the link, it looks like molecular hydrogen it really acts on peroxynitrite, which is a nitrogen species that, according to what I could find, is the smallest molecule that can, in fact, get into the cell and into the cell nuclei and really act as a mitochondrial poison. And molecular hydrogen will preferentially target this and disrupt this peroxynitrite to make sure it doesn't damage your body. So I think as far as a mitigation strategy, it's a very good thing. It has a lot of potential. I talked to different practitioners. I talked to Dr. Zach Bush, who knows all about this. He told me, according to Zach Bush, it was really a problem of dehydration at the cell level. And he told me about different hydration protocol that he uses. And he saw different patients that were electro hypersensitive. And he even told me in this interview we did in Vermont back in 2018, he told me, Nick, I didn't believe it at first. I saw the patient that was hypersensitive and he had really a hard time, and he's an open-minded guy. A lot of people know him for, you know, being so now very, very wide scope in his understanding of health and ecosystems and the microbiome. And, you know, he gets very spiritual and very a large vision. But even for him, it was a difficult stretch to see someone that sensitive to EMFs. But going back to dehydration, what might be happening is really that I think it has to do with the mineral balance in the cell, because we know
calcium
that different
flooding the cell, right?
Yeah, there's calcium flooding into the cell, but not only calcium, but there's sodium and potassium channels that are affected as well. Although how much and to what degree, I would follow the work of biophysicists such as Dr. Panagopoulos from the University of Athens. And his latest paper, I'm unable to read it. Sorry, I don't have the competency really for this level of biophysics. But he does say very quite simply that many different types of ionic channels are impacted, which is unsurprising, again, because many of them are voltage gated and will open or close depending on external voltages. And again, if we say that the mitochondria can react to 2% change in voltage, maybe this is also the case for many parts of the cell, including the channels. But what else is, I mean, everything is bioelectrical. So the interactions are many. And probably my guess is that 99% of these interactions have not been found yet, and that in the future our understanding of the damage that has already occurred will be much richer. But it's really dehydrating you, and it might be another angle to explore, because I found a paper, and many people are familiar with the work of Dr. Gerald Pollack in Easy Water.
15
fifth phase of water,
right?
He started a study with one of his PhD students, and unfortunately I emailed Dr. Pollack lately and that study was never published, so I cannot say if these results are, you know, to be trusted or not. But they saw a decrease in 15-20% in Easy Water when water was exposed to Wi-Fi. So it's interesting, because we know that Easy Water, and there's a whole question, okay, well, if you drink Easy Water, does that water puts it in the cells, and or right, is it, you know, internal processes that structure the water in your cells? And you probably have way more knowledge about this than I do. But then you put Wi-Fi next to your body. What is it doing to internally to this water and to the role and the if we change the viscosity of water, we change the viscosity of blood. And there are some indications that this is the case. But then all cellular processes are hindered because of the change in water structure and how the water acts. So I thought it was, you know, just another interesting angle. But of course, we're kind of repeating the same thing in different spheres or silos of science, right? Water, okay, the water angle, the diabetes angle, the weight loss and this and that and mitochondria. But in the end, it's noise, right? It's disrupting normal biochemical and bioelectric processes.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the body is electric. That is a true statement. Yeah. And I think that the water in the body is one of the overlooked things. I think that one of the functions of the mitochondria is to make deuterium depleted water for coherence and communication in the body. And I think that our body, you know, reacts a lot faster than we think it does. We're so stuck in a biochemical model of like, put this in and get this out. And we don't think about the electrical reactions of the body and how these systems have the ability to communicate very quickly on this kind of coherent level. And I think it's the water. And so it really makes you think, like you said, the water, the mitochondria, all of it's all the same. You disrupt one of these, then you see disease and you see dysfunction. And if we really think about that, I talked to Dr. Pollack myself on the podcast a couple of years ago, same, you know, talked about that same exact study that, yeah, it was, he said it hadn't been published, but that's what they had found in the lab, which is, you know, they're basically trying to shut him down now. Unfortunately, he's lost funding and it's very sad because his work is just absolutely groundbreaking and people need to know about this, but obviously there's, like we mentioned, a little bit of an agenda, I'm sure, going on with this. And you just think about the implications of that. When you look at dehydration and health, I think it's like 80% of diseases have a root in dehydration. And so many people are just chronically dehydrated. They have a hydration protocol. They're doing the minerals. They're doing the structured water. They're doing all of it. And they're still dehydrated. And if that's the case, then I think we have to look at some of these things like lack of grounding and sunlight and non-native EMF exposure. When it comes to why can't people get hydrated these days, I think that that's a huge factor.
Yeah. And then just start with non-native EMFs. Just start with the devices that are touching your body. Yeah. Start there. Start with the devices that might be touching your pillow. Mm-hmm. If you take care of that, then maybe we can talk about next steps and you just do your best and strive for improvement over time while you do the other things. And many people are stuck at the level where they say, oh, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Nothing I can do.
Nothing I can do.
Well,
yep.
You know, that's a bit of a, I think, a mental escape right there. You know, mm-hmm. No, there is something you can do. And there's a reason that many people start sleeping better when they turn off Wi-Fi in their phone. This is a proof that even if you don't turn off the cell towers, and even though the towers do impact you, if you turn off sources that are in your vicinity, you're already doing something good because the body responds in a great way. So let's not be kind of throw the baby with the bathwater and, mm-hmm. and make sure that we just start with something that is realistic for you. And at the same time, I encourage people that see that nothing is working and they feel sick to look at things that are more serious, more EMF mitigation. And if you want a good indication, look, if you don't know if non-native EMF is credible for you or is a huge factor, 7 days in the woods, no technology, do the EMF vacation, the no EMF vacation, I should say, that many environmental medicine doctors are recommending. And if you find yourself feeling transformed and seeing after day 3 or 4, my God, I feel better. Well, there you go. You have at least an indication that something back home is a problem. So then, you know, go between this environment and your environment at home and try to pinpoint what is triggering you. And you might discover that it's certain devices. And you might discover that when you go at Starbucks and sit in a specific spot and there's a Wi-Fi router, you don't feel well. So start paying attention to these things. And over time, you will reduce exposure and will start getting better.
Yeah. It's, you know, I feel like it can feel very daunting and very scary for people, but like you said,
yeah,
it's simple, you know, control what you can. And I think a lot of people do feel better. They do sleep better. I just got an email the other night from a lady who said, oh, this is the last thing that I tried, you know, to see if my sleep could possibly improve any more than it already had. It already had improved from doing all the other things. And she said, I finally stopped sleeping with the phone in the bedroom. And she was sleeping with the phone on airplane mode, but yeah, it was still right next to her on the nightstand. She put it in the next room, which my husband and I both do. And she's like, oh my gosh, my sleep was so much better. It just keeps getting better and better and better, you know, to keep the phone just out of the room. It, that she was shocked. And so these little things that people are just doing, I mean, I know I slept with the phone charging beside my head for years because I just didn't know any better. And I think that's a really simple thing you can do. And if you're worried about missing a call, do what I do. I keep the phone in the bathroom. The ringer is on. It's not like, you know, you can still, the ringer on the phone is pretty darn loud. It's going to wake me up. It's in the next room, but it, and it's very far away from my bed, but I can still hear it, you know? So maybe put it outside your door, put it in another room. You can still get phone calls. And if all else fails, you can get a landline. Those are still maybe like $30 a month. And if you're really worried about missing phone calls and things, you can get a landline. But just keep it the inverse square law, just the distance, the turning off the Wi-Fi, getting rid of the devices, those types of things. And then going to your summit, I think that's, you've got a lot of practical tools there, right? Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
For sure. You know, the summit is specifically on the symptoms around EMF exposures. So it's, some people would call it electrosensitivity. Some people are not just sensitive, but hypersensitive. So there's a whole range of what people can experience when exposed to these signals. But we talk about recovery also, how to get less sensitive to EMFs. And a lot of people have realized, you know, I get headaches from my phone, and it's not like we encourage people to cure the headaches and then use the phone again on the head. But for sure, if you get headaches whenever you're in a coffee shop or an airport or a car, or, you know, it can make your life miserable, literally, if you have this degree of sensitivity. So we show action steps to reduce exposure, but also talk to environmental medicine doctors such as Dr. Neil Nathan or Dr. Eric Gordon, and they talk about recovery, how to calm down certain parts of your nervous system that are triggered by EMF, such as the vagus nerve system and also the limbic brain. And there are specific things that they talk about to get this better, and also how to find out how much EMF is a problem for you. So it's really, you know, an invitation for anyone that has, I would say, even that is slightly curious to a lot of knowledge about EMFs, to learn more about electrosensitivity and really meet with researchers and attorneys, EMF mitigation specialists and activists that are specialized in the electrosensitivity. And I've curated 20 great guests. We have also presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who some people love, some people hate. I don't mind. In the end, it's great that he talked about the legal angle. How do we protect the, you know, the legal rights of people that are electrosensitive, and then all of a sudden they see a new tower being installed? Do you have any rights against that? So it's a huge angle. And we also go into, you know, how to make yourself heard in this day and age where it's increasingly difficult to do so.
Oh, wow. That's going to be fantastic. I can't wait to listen to that. Well, I'm going to make sure I link that in the show notes for people, because that's coming up. What are the dates for the summit?
April 11 to 14th.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I'm going to put that in the show notes so everyone can go and check that out. I think it's going to be, it's such a great resource, and so many amazing speakers, and just very practical for people who are like, okay, this, I think this is an issue for me. I want to learn more about it. So I highly encourage you, if you're listening to this, if this is striking a nerve with you, to go and check out that link. It'll be posted. Where can people find you, find your work, more about you, any of your courses, if they want to dive into more of what you do?
Sure. Well, they can reach me at theemfguy.com. So theemfguy.com. And you have my book, which is a great introduction to EMFs. And links to my shop and, you know, recommended products, things like that. I have also a course that can help you minimize EMFs at home. But I'd say, you know, the summit is a great introduction to my work. You're going to hate it or love it, and I hope you love it. But, you know, it is at least a lot of free information that people can consume. And then they can look into, you know, I have the EMF Circle membership and things like that. But I want to make sure that most of my information is free, as you do as an educator, because I'm here to raise awareness. And I really hope that people get a lot of value from the summit and everything else.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited for people to take a look at those links. And thank you for taking the time out. I know you're a really busy person, especially kind of prepping for the summit. So I appreciate you taking the time out today to chat with me and my community here.
Thanks. Thanks so much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening or watching the Evolving Wellness Podcast. My name is Sarah, and I am so appreciative of you being here. If you enjoyed the episode, please head on over to Apple or Spotify. Leave the show up to a 5-star review. It will help to get the show out to more people. If you're on YouTube, leave us a like, leave us a comment. And as I've mentioned a few times, check out the EMF Hazards Summit happening very, very soon. There is a link in the pinned comment as well as in the show notes if you're on audio only, where you can sign up for free for this summit. You're going to learn a lot and about different ways that you can protect yourself, protect your family. Thanks again to my two sponsors, Upgraded Formulas. Code YOGI12 or YOGI to save on their amazing magnesium or their hair tissue mineral analysis. And VivaRays, code YOGI to save on their amazing circadian glasses, as well as their low EMF headphones. As always, this podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. It is not medical advice. And I always advise everyone to work one-on-one with your doctor or healthcare practitioner if you are concerned about your health, and not to use information from this show to treat or cure any diseases. Thank you again for listening, and I will see you again next week.